there was so much going on TNT yesterday. And, you know, Chris, we get off at 2 p.m., so get to catch the early slate. And at one point, I'm watching Suns-Celtics, and this went a little viral. This is all within the Suns-Celtics game. So at one point, Shaq has a bowl because Shaq loves bowl. So Shaq has
like
a bowl.
A cereal bowl.
He proceeds to put the, you know, the smaller snack size cereals in the cereal bowl.
Okay.
He puts in like Frosted Flakes. Okay. Yeah. Fruit Loops and I think Pops or whatever. And he's making the bowl and Ernie and the rest of the panel, they're just saying, Shaq, what are you doing? This is for my boy, Bowl Bowl. This is for my boy, Bowl Bowl. And then they say,
Wembanyama.
And then they say, well, where is the milk? And he says, I'm gonna do it like we did back in the day where we didn't have milk and we just grabbed what we had.
Don't say water.
He takes his hot tea and poured the tea in the cereal and starts eating.
Don't say eat it.
He starts eating it,
brother,
on TV. Then as the segment is still going on, they pan back to Shaq about a minute, 2 minutes later, and he has the bowl tipped and he's drinking, he's drinking it. It's out of control.
Was it like in a coffee cup that he poured the tea, or was it clear and obvious that it was tea?
Yeah, no. It was obvious because he poured it and it was almost like it looked like a raspberry tea. It had a red tint to it. And you could tell because of the condensation in the bowl. It was warm, hot tea.
I can't stand. First off, Shaq is way too rich to be even doing that. Even if those are humble beginnings, yeah. I don't care, man.
Somebody can go grab you some milk.
Shaq could literally yell in the set, hey, can I get some milk? And someone would literally have to leave the studio, go across the street to some convenience store and pick up some. Like, he has that amount of power. He should not be drinking like a combination of cereals with tea?
Yeah.
No, man.
Yeah.
I don't care how big Shaq is. You can't just throw that down, man.
You just heard Kenny just in the background say,
man,
that that's
what is
nasty.
Going on, man?
That's nasty.
Come on.
That's nasty. So something else happened, and this is actually from the game. So basically a timeout gets called, and Joe Mazzulla is one of the younger coaches.
Yeah.
He's still a bit spry. And I believe it was Royce O'Neal, a timeout gets called, and Royce O'Neal, as a lot of players do, right? Royce O'Neal goes to take a shot during the timeout.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe Mazzulla is already kind of on the court, right? And at this point, the game is about 2 minutes left, something like that in the game, and the Suns are attempting to make a run back. And Joe Mazzulla, who is essentially already on the court, jumps up and fully contends Royce O'Neal's shot. And
that's hilarious.
Everybody grabs it. They say it's fun. You know, everybody grabs a clip.
Yeah.
They say it's funny. You go back to the post game and they're talking about it. And this is what Charles Barkley had to say. I would have knocked the hell out of him. I'm not going to lie. I would have hit him. I'm going to tell you why. I don't like it. What if he stepped on his ankle and hurt himself badly?
Breath.
He can't do that. Come on, man. Is Charles overreacting?
Yes. Oh, my God, yes.
He's not wrong, technically.
Sure, I guess. But, like, no, but he's not going to do, like, you know, it's not like Joe Mazzulla played at West Virginia in college. Like,
right.
It's not like he's, you know, Tom Thibodeau out there or
contesting
a jumper. Like, he knows what he's doing. It's not like I haven't seen the video, but I'm assuming he's not sprinting at him like he's on a closeout.
No.
Like, I'd assume it's a harmless little.
I thought it was harmless, but I guess Barkley has a point. But yeah, that
sounds like he just doesn't like Joe Mazzulla, to be
honest
with you.
Probably, yeah. That show was a bit off the rails yesterday.
It sure was.
That's how they get down, and we know how Keon has been getting down lately. Here's some stats, Chris, that are kind of crazy, and this is from Basketball Reference. Keon Ellis, as we know, is 6-0 as a starter for the Kings with wins over Portland, OKC, Utah, Minnesota, Milwaukee, and the Lakers. Their defensive rating in these games is 106.99, which would be first in the league, very small sample size, better than Minnesota's league-leading mark of 109.78. Kings overall rank 20th at 117.62. Now, let's continue here. Next, you have, as a side, and this is from Professor Oak in Kings Twitter, who's just pulling all these numbers. As an aside, the Kings' offensive rating in these six games is 121.12, which would rank third in the NBA. Their overall net rating in these games is plus 14.13, which would be first in the NBA. And four of these games were played without De'Aaron Fox.
That's crazy. That's the craziest part
about it. Is this too insane to say, wow? Is it too small of a sample size to say this is out of control, or is it out of control either way? In a good way, out of control.
I think that it's a too small of a sample size to take it and run with it and just say this is how it should be, but it's a large enough sample size to say there's definitely something here that we should further explore. And, you know, I think it's interesting of – how much of this, too, is I know those are numbers and Keon starts, but how much is it to Mike? What Mike Brown was trying to tell us Wednesday after the game? Well, he cannot start and still play 20, 25 minutes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, is that maybe where Mike Brown's going to use these stats in towards his advantage? I definitely think it's something. Like, if we're doing something, nothing, or a little bit of something, I would definitely say that this is absolutely something. Like, the fact that they, because it's both numbers, like, you could just tell me the defensive number that with Keon Ellis in the starting lineup, the Kings are or would be first in defensive rating. That's definitely a noteworthy note or stat. But then you throw on the fact that the offense, it doesn't disrupt the offense at all, and it might even make them better in weird ways. That's where it's like, okay, we cannot just ignore this because that's the recipe everybody's looking for, right? Can you be excellent defensively and still not compromise yourself offensively? That's the balance that the Kings have struggled to find all season long. We saw at the beginning of the year, it was Keegan Murray, how can you develop your defense? But it killed his offense, and that really symbolized the Kings as well. They couldn't find consistent shooting. If they can lock up and play offense at the same time, I think that's exactly what they're looking for, and they should definitely do what they can to explore those options as much as possible.
Yeah, I'm more convinced on the defensive side of things than the offensive side of things. I think it's too small of a sample size as far as Keon's just been hot right now.
Yeah, exactly.
And I would like to see the numbers for when Keon eclipses a certain number of minutes.
Exactly.
So when Keon plays more than 15 minutes, maybe, what does it look like? Because I think that's probably a more realistic look than, because some of those starts, he hasn't played that many minutes. Some of those starts, he may not have eclipsed 20 minutes, right? If I'm not mistaken, I don't know that he has gotten to, I mean, definitely 25 in all of his starts. We'd have to check that one out. But yeah, the defensive, I'm already sold on. I think that that is the easy sell. It's the offensive side of things where you have to see. But the one thing that we have to remember as far as the lights maybe being too bright as far as the playoffs is that there are a lot of I mean, Sabonis, I would not count as a question mark, but there are a lot of question marks throughout this whole roster as far as the lights being too bright.
Yeah.
So for me, whether it's Kevin Huerter or Keegan Murray, are we just assuming that because they were in the playoffs last season, the lights aren't going to be too bright this season? Yeah. I'm not saying that to say that they're not going to be ready. I'm saying that to say I don't know that that's a reason to be more worried about Keon Ellis than either of those guys who struggled in the playoffs as well.
Yeah, no. And I looked up the number. When Keon plays 15 or more minutes, the Kings, it's been 13 games this season. They're 10-3.
Wow.
So they're 10-3 when Keon Ellis plays.
So you got the 6-0, obviously.
Yep, you got the 6-0, obviously. I mean, yeah, in games in which he didn't start but played more than 15 minutes, it was two Phoenix wins, one at Phoenix, one at home, both of which were in December. You have one of those losses is to OKC, one of those losses is to Houston, but that was the game where or one of the games in which the Kings got absolute. Oh no, that was the game recently, actually. Mm-hmm. And then the one of those other games was a Boston 25-point blowout, which he was probably playing a lot of garbage time. So
interesting.
Yeah,
interesting. So
yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, that's you said it earlier, but I kind of want to see what the offense looks like maybe when Keon doesn't have it going, because he's not going to be hot the rest of this season. And yeah, the playoffs is definitely an interesting thing to talk about with this team, because, you know, yeah, while we can talk about defense and defensive intensity with this team, you're totally right. Like, Kevin Huerter didn't knock down shots in the playoffs last year. Mm-hmm. Keegan Murray for the first three games didn't knock down shots. Harrison Barnes didn't knock down shots in the playoffs. And I don't really know how or if that problem is fixed, but with how they've played so far this season, I have a tough time just believing that it's going to happen, like you said, just because they have that
right,
one
just
because
they were there.
Doesn't necessarily, I mean, if all season long,
yeah,
Kevin Herter's been up and down and up and down, and Keegan has been down and then up and then hurt, and now it looks like he's playing well, and who even knows how to describe what HB's done this year? Like, I don't know why, just like you said, just because it's now the playoffs and they're more focused up, the shots are just going to fall. Like, I have a tough time seeing that. We just won't know.
We will not know.
Yeah.
There is no way for us to know.
And we don't even know how much of it was the Warriors versus just them being in that situation. Because, like, the Sabonis thing, really. Like, we don't know if just the Warriors did something to make Sabonis uncomfortable, or if maybe, for whatever reason, playoff lights are too bright and Sabonis struggled because of that.
But that's what's interesting about this Kings team, because, and I think they have another opportunity against the Knicks on Saturday. Yeah. Their primetime matchups, they normally do pretty well. Yeah, they got blown out against the 76ers, right? But without Joel Embiid. But for the most part, they have shown up in these big matchups when it's nationally televised against big brand names, whether it be the Warriors or whoever it is, they've shown up.
Yep.
So, and we'd have to look up how they did in primetime matchups last season compared to this season, but that makes me feel a little bit better. Mm-hmm. It's not the same, but it's the closest thing.
Yeah, for sure.
You're going to get. That's why I think a lot of us, as silly as it sounded, wanted to see how they would do in the in-season tournament because it's the one of the closest things, and we know now it wasn't close at all with where the Lakers have ended up. And to look at the schedule, Chris, it's an insane back-to-back. They're at Knicks, at Celtics. You're back east. You got to play in New York in the Garden where De'Aaron, he thinks it's overrated, and they're going to let him hear it. And you got to go to Boston. To me, especially with what's on the line.
When is that? That's next weekend?
No. That's in April.
In April.
That's the beginning of April. So to me, the one good thing about, we talk about, man, April's going to be tough, but the one good thing is these games are going to matter and they're big opponents. Mm-hmm. So the closest that the Kings will be able to get to that playoff environment, at least they will have
that.
They'll
get a taste of it, yeah.
I'll honestly take that over playing the Hornets, and they got the Blazers for the last game,
but yeah,
I'd probably take that over it.
It's a nice little ramp up, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. When we return, Patrick Beverley gives more. What is happening? Are we in the upside down? Now Patrick Beverley giving high praise to Sacramento, and not just the team, the city as well. We will play that sound. We'll also get into the MVP ladder. And Draymond Green give his thoughts on Sabonis being 10-0 against Anthony Davis. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Local.
Live and local.
This is Sacktown Sports.
Live Nation has teamed up with Sactown Sports for your chance to see local legend Hasan Minhaj at the Safe Credit Union Performing Arts Center from beautiful downtown Sacramento on March 29th. All you have to do is hit up the Folsom Lake Honda hotline at 1 p.m. I think I said I'm picking the number today. Or did I say no, Chris? I think it's Chris's turn to pick the number for your chance to see local legend Hasan Minhaj as we continue to break down all things Sacramento Kings. And Patrick Beverly actually had some high praise. What's going on, Chris, with everybody just being nice to Sacramento?
I'm telling you, man.
Is it the weather?
You beat the Lakers, man, and then all of a sudden people start talking nice to you. And I guess, you know, Patrick Beverly.
Sweep.
That's true. Sweep the Lakers. That's right.
And it was national.
Sold them short.
Because I know the first game was national.
Back-to-back against the Bucks, which is why Patrick Beverly's talking about him. He's on the Bucks and the Kings handed. I'll just say belt to behind, as Patrick
That's
Beverly
what he
likes
says.
To say.
A and then two dollar signs.
Yes, there you go.
Yes.
There you go. Yeah, so that I think that has to do with why Pat Bev is talking about him. I don't know why Draymond's talking about the Kings. I'm here for the at least respect. I mean, you know, it's the Kings' history with being on national TV is usually not great. I mean, usually if in the past when they were talking about the Kings, it was never positive. So it is it's a weird adjustment period to have them. I guess if they're going to be forced to talk about the Kings, at least it's positive.
Let's hear from Patrick Beverly and what he had to say.
Sure enough.
Oh, my goodness, boy, the speed.
I think Sabonis is just underrated in the fact that he's playing. We went from Indiana to Sacramento.
He's playing so well. It's the system, too. You got to get a coach a lot of credit. Obviously, De'Aaron Fox, Malik Monk. I mean, they playing their ass off. They energetic. They're flying around.
Harrison Barnes.
I mean, yeah, he's steady all the time.
Keegan Murray didn't play against you guys, but he's very nice.
Yeah. Trey Lyles. I mean, those guys are herderer. Yeah, solid. I always like Sac, though.
Yeah, heard her. Popular among the ladies.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know that.
That one girl said that she's, I guess, in love with him or something like that.
Yeah, crazy.
The girl from the background of that Steph Curry photo, but who was looking in the background of the picture?
Herderer.
Hey, at least he's bringing it up.
At least he's talking about
it. At least he's bringing it up. You know, you had Wembanyama and everything like that. So they're getting respect, man. And the Bucks, they saw it straight up, and obviously this is exactly what's been missing. If this had happened, or if this narrative was going, and that's what happens when you're in Sacramento, it takes much longer to get where you actually already have been. And yes, they're playing good ball right now, but the Kings have had good stretches before. And if you were having conversations like this in the national, I don't know if you consider. Is Patrick Beverly, is he national media? What do we do with these player podcasts? National media?
I don't know. I guess.
Or league-wide,
sure.
If you will.
Yeah, there you go.
To have these conversations league-wide, Domantas Sabonis would have been an all-star, and De'Aaron Fox would have been an all-star. It's that simple.
Yeah.
It's that simple. Nobody was talking about them, nope. Right? You see the MVP ladders, which we have Sabonis on there, but at the same time, that's not what matters. It's the NBA is so much a cool kids club.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Sacramento just has never been in the cool kids club. They've had to break the door down.
Yeah.
And it feels like right now they have broken the door down by beating two faces of the NBA back to back.
Yeah.
That's just all it took.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, you're totally right, because I've frequented NBA media before, and I've noticed a trend of it usually takes one person sticking their neck out and saying, hey, I've noticed this thing going on where, yeah, I mean, the Kings have won, let's see here, they've won five of their last six games. Oh, wow, the Kings are playing really good basketball. And then all of a sudden, people who cover the league, but as we know, don't actually watch the games, mm-hmm. They're like, oh, okay, let me look into that. Because I think NBA especially, it's so much different. Just the way people talk about basketball is different than any other sport. It feels like, especially from the media or the national media side of things, people are afraid to stick their neck out. People are afraid to say something that everybody else isn't saying. It's easy to just kind of go with the flow and, yeah, talk about the Lakers, talk about the Warriors, but talk about all of the best teams in the league. But you don't hear a lot of conversation about the Pelicans or the Mavericks or the Kings, because that would require them actually watching the games and figuring those things out for themselves. So Yeah, it's interesting to hear the Kings talked this much, but at the same time, you know, we know it'll go away just as quick as it came. And
I'll tell
be
you
a
what,
new
though,
flashy team that everyone's talking about.
I'll tell you what, though. I know the Kings like to fly under the radar. As much as we like this, I don't know how much the Kings like this. They're just not used to it. And this is the same thing that happened coming off that 3 seed at the beginning of the season, and you were there at Media Day with Whitey.
Yeah.
I don't know how comfortable it makes them. And if they show up, that's another big brand. Saturday night, is it National Saturday Night?
I don't think so, but it could be. I mean, it's a 7 o'clock tip, so I can't imagine there's many other games going on.
I'm checking right now. It's not National, yeah, right? But it's still a national brand.
Yeah, definitely.
If you beat the Knicks now, that train is going to keep rolling.
Yeah, no.
It's going to keep rolling, and I hope that the Kings are ready for it. Maybe it took all season to prepare because maybe, hey, we came off last season, we snuck up on some people. You get through this one, and now it's time for Chris to worry.
Yes,
because
exactly.
After that,
it gets easy.
The Grizzlies come to town. You got to go to Toronto, and please, you got to beat Toronto. Toronto cannot beat
you know
anyone.
The Kings are like an elephant, man. They're like, they're big, they're huge, everyone marvels, and then they're afraid of mice.
Yes.
It's like,
that's
you know,
right.
They beat all these giants, they have fun, feels great, and then we see the Grizzlies, and we're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
It's so scary.
You get a little tight.
Can't do it.
Get a little tight.
I cannot stand it.
You host the Grizzlies, you got to go to Toronto, and yeah, this is a little mini back east trip. You go to Toronto.
Six.
You go to Washington. Goodness gracious.
That's not even an option.
No. And I'm not saying, don't say it. Just don't. We're not saying it. We're not saying
you just don't want to be that team.
No.
As Kyle Kuzma.
And he's getting trolled for that as well. Magic. Hey, Magic, they're going to be tough.
Yeah.
They're going to be tough. That was That was double overtime.
Yes.
And De'Aaron Fox played in that game. Mm-hmm. He just didn't play very well. Right.
Yes. Yeah. That was the game where Malik kind of hinted at first that De'Aaron had something going on.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. So that's your back east trip. And then you host the 76ers. And right after that is when you have that not back to back, but 2 games in a row against the Mavericks. You're probably going to see the Mavericks hanging out around Sacramento.
Oh, definitely.
Because you play them.
Yeah. Tuesday.
You play them on Tuesday. Then you don't play them again until Friday.
Yeah.
So they're just chilling here, going to grab some – they're going to be hanging around Doko?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Catch Luka and Kyrie. I'm trying to think where would be a Kyrie destination here in Sacramento. I was trying – the Scientology building's right down the street.
All right. Maybe. When we get back, we continue the Kings conversation. We also discuss Sabonis and where he is on that MVP ladder. And Sacramento's favorite, Draymond Green, gives his thoughts on Sabonis being 10-0 against Anthony Davis. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Check us out on YouTube. Search Sacktown Sports and subscribe.
Live Nation is teamed up with Sacktown Sports for your chance to see local legend Hasan Minhaj at the Safe Credit Union Performing Arts Center from beautiful downtown Sacramento on March 29th. All you have to do is hit up the Folsom Lake Honda hotline at 1 p.m., Chris will pick the lucky number, and you will join the other winners that we've had this week to see Hasan. And speaking of beautiful downtown, it will be beautiful this weekend. So get out there, go enjoy yourself. Even Chris will be outside.
Yeah, I'm going to touch grass.
Chris will be outside. This is from the 530. Coaching is key, getting back to the conversation as far as the rotation. Coaching is key. The coach can mix it up, and that throws the other teams off. Yes, they are attacking Herter, Fox, etc., but Keon and Davion sneak in consistent shooting and other teams aren't paying attention. Longtime fan, Mary Francis.
Nice. Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely. I mean, it'll be interesting to see, I mean, just down the stretch here, but especially, yeah, in the playoffs, like how Mike Brown decides to go about it. I mean, there's definitely going to be at least one playoff game where somebody, and it doesn't have to just be Kevin Huerter, but if we want to use Kevin as the example, you know, we know Kevin and Harrison are probably the most flexible options in that starting lineup. If those two aren't giving it to for them in a playoff game, how quickly does Mike Brown go? Because as we know, you know, we say there's no time to mess around now, but of course in the playoffs in a 7-game series, there's really no time to mess around. There's no time to play favorites. There's no time to worry about, oh, if I pull Kevin in game two, what about his emotions in game three? You've got to do what you can do to win that game that night. Mm-hmm. And it will be interesting to see how quick of a hook Mike Brown has with all of those guys. I mean, even Davion. Like, Davion's great, but and Keon, both of them. If we know what they bring defensively, but if they're not hitting shots, okay, how does Mike balance the risk-reward of what they're giving them defensively versus offensively? It's really a similar game as what he's got to play with Kevin Huerter. It's just on the opposite end of the floor.
Yeah, and I would maybe not disagree, but I don't think Fox gets attacked too much.
No.
If anything, he is a plus defensively. He might not always play to as high of a plus as he can be, but I don't see Fox getting attacked too much. Now, it just depends on if he's getting put into action with maybe a bigger guy. But as far as guards are concerned, if the thought is that he could get attacked, that's when you pull in a Keon,
sure,
or somebody like that. Just to Mary saying she's a longtime fan, and to TD Eckler in the Sack Chat as well saying, hi, love the show. Thank you, TD Eckler. Yes. And honestly, you know, a lot of you have been rocking with us, and we do some of this stuff on Fridays when we peel back the curtain. But, you know, Chris and I, this is still a pretty young show, Styles and Watkins.
That's right.
And word of mouth matters. And, you know, we are doing our best to grow this thing, but your opinion matters.
Absolutely.
And we care about everything that the fans have to say and that the listeners have to say, and also, you know, continue to have the conversation. We only got a couple more months here with the Kings, so tell your friends where you are spending your time between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. And pass it along. Let's continue to grow that Sack Chat. Let's continue to grow in the car. Let's continue to grow the text line, the call line, all that jazz. So appreciate the love, and don't be shy when talking to your friends about how you spend your middays with the bad boys of the midday. As we continue the conversation, Draymond, more talking, and I can't wait for the summer so we can have conversations just about the landscape of media, because the catalyst of new media has something to say, with Draymond giving his thoughts on Sabonis being 10-0 against Anthony Davis.
I see everybody making such a huge deal out of AD being 0-10 facing Sabonis. I actually view that as one of those coincidence type things. Like, do we really believe that Sabonis is better than AD, or could he be a tough matchup? Of course, like, everybody has tough matchups. But you also can't make it just about Sabonis and AD, because the reality is Sacramento offense does run through Sabonis, but not in a manner of like, I'm busting your ass or you bust. Like it ain't that. It's not like mano a mano, like this record is trying to make it out to be.
But it kind of is, though.
Yeah. I mean, it's – I don't get this. I mean, also –
it is, but it isn't.
Let's put this important disclaimer out there.
I know what you're going to say.
Draymond Green, clutch client.
Clutch boys.
Anthony Davis, clutch client.
Mm-hmm.
As we know, Draymond Green has – a lot of feelings for LeBron James. So
yes.
How much of this is caping for his guy? Mm-hmm. Probably a lot. Probably a lot.
Do you guys think Sabonis is better than AD right now?
No. I mean, like, in terms of like a versatile player, like, I mean, AD, I think, provides a lot. What Sabonis is doing consistently on a nightly basis, absolutely.
But you're saying ceiling, though.
Yeah. I'm saying ceiling, and as like a – as a versatile piece.
You're saying AD is more versatile than Sabonis?
I would say so.
I feel like Sabonis is kind of the the like epitome of a Swiss Army knife like Jokic, right? But just that obviously smaller guy. What, like, I don't know. I guess I just wasn't expecting you to say that.
I just think AD, like what he provides defensively is top tier. Mm-hmm. And then offensively, he can definitely provide. I mean, AD can score 30 points in pretty much any night if he
Against Sabonis.
Not against Sabonis for sure, but I mean, let's not.
Or Giannis.
You know, I'm just saying, Joel Embiid. I don't want to confuse.
Or Jokic.
Play as of late versus like what the individual player is. I think Anthony Davis gives you more as an individual player in terms of optionality of how you want to use him, and I think it's at a higher level. But I think Sabonis brings it every single night. You know exactly what you're going to get out of Sabonis, and I mean, obviously, what he brings is incredibly valuable. But it's, I mean, it could also just be, you know, it's your favorite ice cream flavor.
Alex on the Sack Chat is saying 1-on-1, no, yeah. 5-on-5, yes.
That's probably a really good way of putting it. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Cause yeah, I think that's a really good way of saying what I just said, but in a lot better way. So,
are they
Alex,
saying five Sabonises versus five ADs?
No, I think they're just saying in a 5-on-5 setting.
Okay. I just think there's too many variables in that.
Well, no, I mean, it's more just saying you fit. Well, yeah, I mean, even then, you could say orchestrating an offense, absolutely Sabonis. But if you're talking about versatility, I think you could do more with Anthony Davis. You could put him at the 4. You could put him at the 5. Sabonis, you kind of have to put him at the 5. And to do what he's doing now, you also have to put the ball in his hands as much as the ball is being put in his hands. Like,
yeah.
You can, like, imagine if Sabonis is playing next to Luka Doncic, mm-hmm. or something. Like, I don't know if Sabonis is having the same, and Luka might not be the right example, but just a star who has the ball in their hands a good amount, more than De'Aaron does. I think AD just kind of fits that mold, maybe, or fits in positionally in more places than Sabonis does.
Yeah.
I would rather have Sabonis on this team right here, right now, but... you know, I still think AD ceiling-wise is the better player.
The problem with the Lakers is that their two best players cannot show up every single night. But their ceiling, when they do show up, is incredibly high, mm-hmm. right? So if it's a one-game playoff or a one-game setting, you should take Anthony Davis. Yeah. But based on what if it's Anthony Davis against the field or Sabonis against the field, I think most people would take Anthony Davis. Right. The matchup thing, that's what gets so confusing. I mean, I like Sabonis this season. I'm going to reward him for his consistency and say that I would take Sabonis in over AD. He's been better than AD this season.
He has.
Not, you know, LeBron hasn't won the MVP every year, but he's been the best player for a lot of years. So I think that you can say that Sabonis has been better than Anthony Davis this season, but do you think Sabonis is better than Anthony Davis? Yeah. Maybe that answer is no.
And to go back on to Draymond's point, though, I will say I don't understand why the players who are on AD's side of this don't seem to factor in to the record that Sabonis is impacting that because, mm-hmm. like, and Draymond kind of acknowledges it with the, I'm not saying he's not a bad matchup, but it's the, okay, why, like, so you don't see how, since Sabonis is the bad matchup, that's leading to the 10-0. Because Sabonis is so physical with AD.
It's the most important of the matchups.
He's completely changing AD's style of play, which is leading his team, which relies on AD to play at a high level, which Sabonis is preventing through his style of play, to lose those games. Like, I don't see how they're not connecting those dots. So, numbers are numbers. Like you said, numbers don't lie. 10-0 against AD. You could spin it however you want. The facts are, when Sabonis is out there, AD really struggles to play his normal game, and it really seems to affect how the outcome comes out. So those are the facts of the matter.
Yeah, he lost me when he essentially said that, he's not busting his you-know-what, because he kind of is.
He is.
Right?
That's putting him on the floor.
Yes, that's literally what's happening. So I don't really understand. And again, has Draymond...
It is mano-a-mano. He says it's not a mano-a-mano thing. Like, they're not hiding Sabonis off of AD and vice versa. Like, it is a one-on-one thing.
Well, if that's the case, then pull the the matchup numbers. And if the matchup numbers don't match the record, and I'm sure a Lakers fan.
They don't. They like AD kills Sabonis in the statistics. It's like all AD.
Are you sure?
Yes. Yeah. I looked at it yesterday. It's pretty significantly in AD's favor.
Are you sure?
Yes. Yeah. We can come back with it at the top of the break.
But that doesn't fit our narrative, well, so we can
exactly.
go ahead.
That's why I didn't say it.
Well, I'm surprised we haven't heard that before, right? Maybe it's because AD honestly doesn't really have a great brand. To
so
be completely honest,
here we
you.
Go. In there,
hold on, Chris. Okay. When we return,
okay.
we will get to those numbers, and we will also discuss a beast. In Southern California, will not be a foe of the Niners anymore. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Sports. Call or text at 916-339-1140.
Things keep a changing as the Jaguars and Brandon Ayuk have mutual interest. But before we break all those things down, Aaron Donald announces his retirement. How do you feel about that?
It was really surprising to me. Felt like it came out of nowhere. I remember, I think it was last year, we started to hear like whispers of it, but even that didn't make sense. And I know McVay has talked about, you know, leaving after that Super Bowl. Just kind of seemed like it came out of nowhere. I mean, Aaron Donald seems to be in really good shape. I know he hurt his knee or something like that a year ago, but looked fine last year. And I mean, you know, I guess it is just you want to quit while you're ahead, while your body's still intact. And I mean, Aaron Donald's got the Super Bowl. He's got all the accolades. He's, you know, regarded as probably the best defender of this generation. Not even probably. He is regarded as the best defender of this generation. So, you know, I guess if he looks at this Rams situation and says, what am I going to play another year to maybe sneak into the playoffs? Like, you know, maybe I should just call it a year early.
Yeah, and they've kind of messed with this for a couple years here. The only reason, and it's a little bit similar to Jason Kelce, is that both teams are retooling, right? I mean, the Eagles are definitely retooling, but both teams have an opportunity to mess around and maybe get, they both already have Super Bowl rings.
Yeah.
Do you really care about getting it? They're not quarterbacks, so it doesn't really matter. One ring, two ring, sure. Maybe that's part of it. I know Jason Kelce has been very open about it being hard to see the Eagles make these moves, and it's difficult for him. Aaron Donald, a little bit different. I don't know if he has a podcast or not. If he
not
does,
yet.
I haven't. Yeah, if he does, I haven't heard it, but we know Jason Kelce and his bro have one. So, yeah, Aaron Donald, I mean, he's been a beast, man, and some of his accolades, like you talked about, he's just been one of those guys. He matched Lawrence Taylor and J.J. Watt as the only three-time Defensive Player of the Year honorees and led the way in the Rams winning that Super Bowl. He has that famous. Was he the don't? I know he's probably not the first one to ever do it, but he has one of the more iconic photos of pointing to the ring finger.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's got it.
He did it. I think he did it as a sack celebration. I think that's why.
Yeah, yeah. He did that because that was definitely before Steph did it, yeah. And I'm sure somebody did. And then obviously Angel Reese did it. So yeah. I'm sure somebody did it before Aaron Donald, but that's one of the more iconic photos in NFL history.
Yeah, I can picture it in my head.
Yeah, bringing that championship to LA, and you know, they went all in for that season, and it actually worked out for them. And then they go on to get back in the playoffs a couple seasons later. So I know Niners fans got to be happy that he's gone. I saw Kyler Murray hop on Twitter and say, thank God, with a bunch of laughing emojis.
I saw Feliciano say, what a great day. I signed a contract and Aaron Donald retires.
Right, right. So he was a beast, man. And anytime people react like that, it makes you wonder, should he be done or yeah. is he really done? So good on Aaron Darnold on an incredible career, and stay there. Stay, yeah, stay gone and out of the NFC West as we continue to talk NFC West and Brandon Ayuk. This is, look, this is part of this is the NFL. It's not, can't be the hot stove, but whatever you want to call it, the air fryer, whatever you want to call it. Part of that is just all the discussions, but in 1 week, two of the Niners wide receivers have been connected to other teams.
Yeah.
You have Debo being connected to the Ravens and the Ravens GM coming out and saying, hey, that was a bit of a rumor, yada, yada, yada. Now you have Brandon Ayuk and the Jaguars having mutual interest. This is from Mia O'Brien, a reporter for Jacksonville radio station, seemingly reports some mutual interest between San Francisco wide receiver Brandon Ayuk and the Jags. And I know you have more on that, Chris, as well.
Yeah, no.
They have a 17 pick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting just how, you know, if Jacksonville's really down for it. I mean, they're making moves this offseason. I mean, they just signed Arik Armstead, as we know, and I wonder how much of this is Trent Baalke is still heavily involved. I think he's still their GM for the Jaguars. So how much of this is just him kind of looking at the Niners and saying, I would like to take a piece of that because I know what that organization is. I know the kind of guys they bring in, and those are the kind of guys that I want in Jacksonville as they're trying to kind of get over the hump and you know, turn Trevor Lawrence back into that big star that he was coming out of college. It makes sense from their end. It's just how much, you know, John Lynch had some kind words to say about Ayuk. I think that was at the combine, if I'm not mistaken. He was like, Brandon's one of those guys we think incredibly highly of. One of my favorite guys around our building, the way he approaches the game. He's a competitor. He's a warrior. He plays with such physicality, also with grace. In some of the way, some of the positions his body can get into, it's ridiculous. Those are high praise from your GM. So I don't know, you know, they're making it sound like they want to keep Ayuk around, but you know, with both of their receivers being thrown into these trade rumors, it just makes me wonder from the Niners side, like how much of this is, I know everybody talks across the league. Has it been known, or are people just reading the contract situations and saying the Niners can only keep one of them? Mm-hmm. You know, just looking at it on paper, do the Niners really want to pay both of their receivers $50 million? I don't know if the word is out from internally that the Niners are saying that, and now other teams are hearing it and saying, hey, let's hop in there before the piranhas attack, you know, or if it is just people reading the situation and trying to get ahead of it.
Yeah, so some of the proposed trades that I saw with the Jaguars and the Niners, it was the first round pick, which is pick 17.
Pick 17, okay.
Yeah, and a third round pick for Brandon Ayuk. And the question is, if you're a Niners fan, 916-339-1140, pick 17 and a third round pick for Brandon Ayuk. Would you do it? So that is the pick 96.
And I would think that you're probably using that you're envisioning using one of your first round picks on a receiver, right? I would imagine.
Probably.
Like maybe if you know, I assume Marvin Harrison and Malik Nabers will be gone, but you probably look to swoop up the third receiver if you're taking him at 17.
Right.
At 31, you're probably just taking the best of the rest, whichever one is your favorite. I mean, I haven't dove deep into draft research to figure out who the fourth and fifth receiver are, but I think that's kind of the value proposition that the Niners have to play here is, you know, I'll definitely mention it. Hey, I could talk about the Vikings a lot today, but I'm only going to mention this. Mm-hmm. The Vikings traded Stephon Diggs and then used the pick that they got from the Stephon Diggs trade to get Justin Jefferson. That's the model. That's what the Niners, if they are going to make this move, that's the thing that I think they'll probably try and follow. The question you have to ask yourself is, how realistic is it, and how much of that is just the Vikings kind of hit the jackpot there?
Yeah, so that would give the Niners, they would then have pick 17 in the first round, pick 31 in the first round. Okay. You can go offensive line at 17 and then a wide receiver at 31.
Right.
And then you would have two picks pretty close back to back. So you have pick 94, which is your pick, and then you would get that pick 96 from the Jaguars. So for Brandon Ayuk, I think the issue is Brandon Ayuk and Brock Purdy. And shout out Brock Purdy. I'm sure everybody saw, but he got married.
That's right.
Over the weekend?
It was last weekend.
Last weekend to his college sweetheart. Shout out to the college sweethearts out there. So Brock Purdy, that's been everywhere. Good on him. But that was Brock Purdy's wide receiver sweetheart.
Yeah.
And that was one of the guys who he has a great connection with. Really his security blanket. Mm-hmm. And I think what it is the Niners would probably be more willing to move Debo, but Debo has a tougher contract move, situation. Right. So I don't know that they make this move. You still got Ronnie Bell, who is a different receiver, in my opinion, to Brandon Ayuk. You got a couple guys that you have, right? Or you could draft a guy. Do you make that move if you're the Niners? Do you feel like you have enough? George Kittle also restructured. Who knows? But I do think this is a conversation that's going to continue to pop up when we return. So Bonus, still in that number six spot on the MVP ladder. We also preview the New York Knicks. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.